Welcome to Encounters in the EAP Classroom, a podcast that reflects upon different experiences in the higher education English language classroom and provides thoughtful suggestions for both learners and instructors. I'm your host, Laura McNabb. Hi, and thanks for joining me. In today's episode, I'm going to talk about class discussions and seminars. I have just finished up small group discussions in the course I was teaching this semester, and some of the discussions were amazing. It was like I just enjoyed every second of listening to them, and I learned so much from them. And then others, oh, they were just so painful. And that's what I want to focus on. Like, what is the difference between a discussion that's just a joy versus one that's very painful? And I would suggest it's not painful just for the instructor, but also for the students involved. So for most of the EAP courses I have taught at university, there's always a speaking component. Now, sometimes this is a presentation, either individual or team, and very often there will be a discussion assessment. Students are usually placed in random small groups between 3 to 5 people. They're given a general topic area to prepare, and then they show up on the day for, you know, anywhere between 10 and 20 minute discussion on a specific topic in front of the instructor. Now, usually the topics are taken from the syllabus so that it won't involve concepts and vocabulary that is new for the students, especially because in an EAP course, the assessment purpose isn't necessarily a new subject and teaching a new subject, but rather to provide feedback on the students' use of English language communication skills for discussion purposes. So whether the students agree or disagree with each other, or even have their facts accurately referenced, isn't the main point to the design of the assessment. For integrated courses that focus both on content and English language use, which is what I actually have just finished teaching in a intercultural communication course, there is a grade for content knowledge. And sometimes that's actually where that line of joy and pain can be a bit more obvious. So for many EAP courses, though, while most discussion marking descriptors do have a task category, it is less about how much the student knows about the topic and more about how well they can defend what they do know. If the student only knows a couple of things, that's fine, but they're going to need to reference them and back up their ideas. If they know lots of things about this topic, that's fantastic, but they're still going to need the sources to support their opinions and ideas. Some of the other categories in a descriptor's grade sheet might include fluency, vocabulary, grammar, pronunciation. What kind of sentence structures can the students use? Are they able to use various topic-specific vocabulary and pronounce it correctly? Can the student speak coherently enough to be understood by his peers or her peers without difficulty? And so generally, for most intents and purposes, the students satisfactorily fulfill the grading criteria and give the instructor no reason to doubt students' discussion skills as per the criteria. I don't know about you, but I have often gotten to the end of a discussion and I've been left with a sense of wanting more. It was like the discussion was just kind of happening on a surface level. You know, they were going through the motions, I was going through the motions, and it wasn't necessarily actually promoting any growth and developed understanding amongst the students. It begins to feel like, did we actually have any kind of an authentic interaction during this assessment? Now, this could have been because there was a lack of depth in the discussion. It was being used to exchange ideas. You know, I think, you think, I think, you think. So maybe perhaps done more transactionally instead of coming to agreement or trying to persuade each other. This does show up because some discussions in a more dialogical method or dialogical style as in Socrates, it's around the argument. It's the idea that we're going to examine this topic from many different angles and we're going to consider many different perspectives. Socrates actually wasn't interested necessarily in coming to a specific conclusion. Socratic seminars create this purpose, this idea. People add to the discussion and they're not necessarily trying to come to a finalized answer. Now, on the other hand, the dialectical approach, which is often associated with, say, Confucius, was aiming to discuss things in the purpose of coming to a common conclusion between the discussion members. Even though you do consider more than one possibility, you're only going to consider the possibilities that are creating disagreement. It's not in the same Socratic idea of every possibility there is we must look at. Not necessarily that anyone's doing that exactly. So problem solving, if you think of that perhaps more dialectically, is a pretty common approach in daily life, right? Like think about the conversations you have to make decisions. Where should we go to eat? Where shall we go for which movie at which theater? Okay, we've got this, we've got that. Very rarely do we go through the whole thing looking at each one separately, but instead we often narrow it down. Okay, these are our top three choices. Is it this? Is it this? And we come to an agreement and then we can go for supper, dinner, or we can, you know, go to a movie or agree on what we're going to watch on Netflix or which video game to play. And this is what I often see in the classroom, in class discussions. Student A says, this is what I think. Student B says, I agree with you. Student C says, I disagree with you, but for today, it's okay. And this is what I heard quite a few times, actually. There'd be three students and one student disagreed, but then would simply say, well, okay, for today, I've been persuaded. And then they would go to the next question. And I'd be sitting there thinking, whoa, it would be so interesting to hear more. Like, how can you bat this around? But it wasn't being approached from that way. It's also that most of my classes are first year or second year. This particular assessment that I was watching were first year. Second semester, first year students. They're still really new to the university and the expectations and the dialogues that are expected, the seminars, the discussions, the tutorials that will be coming. Now, the dialogical method is going to ask group members to consider options from lots of different perspectives. And in fact, that's a priority that's given. Okay, this is how I see it as, for example, a female. How would a male see it? Or this is how I see it as an adult. How would a child see it? So constantly thinking, okay, what is perhaps the opposite of me. This is what it's like if we're in a more open scenario. These are the considerations for indoor. What about outdoor? Is this a good restaurant for breakfast or for dinner? And you can just be looking at so many different things and looking at so many different perspectives. And as you can imagine, yeah, it's quite time consuming and it requires a lot more input from the discussion members, from the students, beyond I agree or I disagree with you. And when you consider that most discussions at university are primarily interested in increased understanding, the idea of the academic discussion, the seminar, is for students to exchange their ideas, to ask each other questions, or, you know, even with a tutorial with the professor involved, but it's still looking for increased understanding and comprehension of a topic. You don't come to the tutorial or the seminar because you have all the answers. You come because you want to learn more, want to think about things from somebody else's perspective. And that's where it becomes questionable of what is the goal of the EAP class discussion. Ask students to ask each other questions, to question the concepts, to seek further understanding. We want them to negotiate and co-construct meaning with each other, but then we tell them they've only got 10 minutes. So in 10 minutes, do we honestly expect them to explore a topic? Or do we just want them to throw out a few terms, demonstrate some short-term memorized information, and wrap it up with a nice conclusion? You know, basically to confirm that they have been in class, they have interacted with the materials of the class, and they have followed a didactic teaching approach. So this is where I came to when I was thinking about this. And I'm like, okay, if that's the case, if we're just saying, show me evidence that you read the material, show me evidence that you comprehend the material, great. Okay, that's not a terrible thing. But I think then that we need to get really clear about that's what it is. And maybe it is clear for some of my colleagues and it's me that's making it more complicated. That's possible. But it's important, regardless, to be really honest about what are we asking our students to do. It is about simply demonstrating the knowledge that was presented in the class, then that's not really something that requires a lot of importance about bringing your own ideas. It simply means that you need to remember what was said and then bring that to the class. But if the discussion is about, well, this is what you heard, now what do you think about it? Negotiate with each other, talk together, co-construct meanings, consider different perspectives, explore possibilities. I think we need to be really clear about this is what we are asking you to do. And that means that students are going to need to prepare in a different way. If you're preparing just simply to regurgitate what you heard, that's different than, oh, the topic's going to be such and such, and I need to have some opinions about it. And I find that students, they're totally fine to do either one, just be clear about it. And students will do the reading, they'll do the preparation, and they arrive ready to discuss. And so when they're encouraged to interact with each other, they've been taught to question and use follow-up questions. I don't understand. Can you clarify? Could you say more? They do practice with this in class and they're quick to follow with it. And they're willing to incorporate these ideas into their own discussion habits. But I think only when they realize that that's part of the discussion, asking someone to explain it more, asking someone to give examples, you're only going to do that in a genuine, sincere way if you actually are sincerely interested. Otherwise, I think then we get a lot of what we witness, which is, yes, we're suggesting ideas and we're asking each other, but it's all being done kind of at this superficial level. So being really clear, which type of discussion are we expecting? And then I also think it also becomes more superficial when, yes, classmates arrive unprepared. And partly that's just the nature of the class and the group learning environment, which is that somebody's going to show up and they're not going to be able to mediate new information. They're not going to be able to bring depth to the discussion. I've witnessed discussions where one or two students arrive with their ideas, but the others don't. And so when they make a statement and then they get asked a question, they have nothing further to add. And you can kind of watch the discussion just flatten out. It kind of just goes nowhere. And it's a big energy drain on the discussion and on the other students. Then the other thing that I also see is a student makes a statement, another student asks for clarification, and the first student replies, and then the second student does a 90-degree right turn in another direction. It's kind of indicative of lack of understanding around we are co-constructing and we are negotiating for meanings. I think sometimes it also happens because the topic is more complex than perhaps the students were prepared for. A lot of different things are happening. Have we been clear with what we want? Are the students clear with what they're supposed to prepare for? Do they then actually prepare for it? Today I was playing basketball with my two nephews. Now one is 8 and one is almost 7. And what I can honestly say is that actually we weren't playing basketball together. We were 3 people on the court with 3 balls, and each of us was playing basketball because we each shot our own basketball. Like sometimes my nephew would say, well, let's play a game. But then very quickly he'd run and get his own ball, you know, so we weren't really playing together. This is pretty common for this age category. And we know from watching children play soccer or basketball, there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of running around. And there's not quite so much teamwork happening. Now, if we watch older teams or professional teams, we notice right away, oh, that player is not a team player. We don't want to watch 5 professionals each playing their own game or actually 10 if you have a basketball game. So you got 10 individuals each trying to get their own score. That would just be chaos, I guess. I don't know. It would not be what we went expecting to get, right? And so this is when I thought about, and I think a discussion is a team. Group members are working together to explore the topic. So if we take sports and if we take basketball as an analogy, you've got 5 players on the court. They've got the goal of putting the basketball into the net or into the basket to score 2 points. And that's their whole goal. They're trying to get from one end of the court to the other. They're trying to go through the opposition, but the 5 of them are working together and they pass and they dribble and they pass back and they do all these maneuvers with the 5 of them together and get the ball in the basket. And it is beautiful to watch. Beautifully operational team that is working together. And I think it's the same any team. It could be a work team, it could be a project team, but it's also a discussion team. And I think that this is something that is missing in a lot of the discussions around teaching, and I look at my own classroom for that, which is that I haven't spent enough time working with them on the team aspect of it. That this is not individuals per se, but it's a team effort to increase everyone's understanding. So if we think about a Socratic seminar and we have each person, and this is what I find is that like each person gets to say something, but then they don't necessarily address what the person before them said. They're not thinking about what the person after them might say. Because if you think about basketball, it's like I need to get to a place on the court that's going to allow me to pass the ball to someone else. And when you speak then, if you speak thinking I need to take this conversation, I need to take this discussion to a new point where I can pass it off to someone else and they can add their interactions to it. And then the mediation. So not only do I necessarily have my other teammates, but where can I take this so that I can add in this material that I read about? Or where can I move the conversation so that somebody else can bring in something that they added, which is the beauty of a question like, do you have an example? And then it could be, well, yes, as so-and-so mentioned that I read. So the idea that our classmates are bringing content and value to the discussion. And I think this is a shift that has to happen. And it's a shift that invites the students to work together as a team. We are communicating with each other. We're negotiating meaning. And rather than saying, I just don't have the vocabulary, it's like, no, but you're working together. You're negotiating with each other. You're moving the basketball down the court. You're moving the topic further into more understanding, into more development. You're passing ideas back and forth. This, I think, is where it's not so much, is this, I individually need to regurgitate what I heard in class, or I need to come and ask my classmates lots of questions. But instead, I'm coming with my team and we're going to develop this topic. We're going to develop these ideas. Thank you for joining today. Encounters in the EAP Classroom is written, hosted, and produced by Laura McNabb. You can learn more about Laura and her teaching at her website, www.windowsoflife.com. If you have teaching ideas or would like to collaborate with Laura, she would love to hear from you. See you next time!